This week on The Deep Dive, we talk about Tacoma, a narrative adventure set aboard a high-tech space station in the year 2088. As you go about your mission, we explore every detail of how the station's crew lived and worked, finding the clues that add up to a gripping story of trust, fear, and resolve in the face of disaster. The game is developed and published by Fulbright, based out of Portland, Oregon. And as always, it is recommended that you play the game before listening, as we are going to dive deep, and in the abyss, there be spoilers. Without further ado, let's descend.
All right, Minnie. Ready to start docking sequence?
Okay. Engaging retro thrusters now. Lunar Transfer Station Tacoma, Commercial Cargo Transit Facility. Crew evacuated. Station AI offline.
Air supply?
Breathable air on Tacoma for a crew of one should be more than sufficient. Docking now.
Hello and welcome to The Deep Dive. Today we have the Rob Logan.
The Rob Logan.
I made sure to say the Rob Logan with us, who is co-host of the Geek Generation Co. now. Is it like official that you're having multiple people on the Geek Generation? Or,
I mean, I guess I'm still the host, yeah. and it's just more of a collaborative effort.
Yeah. Okay. And creator of two of my favorite podcasts. That would be the Random Movie Club and the Geek Generation. Hello, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Wonderful.
We also have with us Captain. Hi, Cap.
Hi. Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about Tacoma, which is a game that Rob just finished. I just watched him stream the end of it. He really liked it. And I've been meaning to have Rob on the podcast for ages. And we just hadn't figured out which game he wanted to do yet. And when he finished Tacoma, he was like, this one. Absolutely this one.
Minnie, I'm headed in. Talk to you when I'm back. Don't let anybody scan the ship while I'm gone.
Okay.
Hello, I am Odin, Lunar Transfer Station Tacoma's Operational Data Interface Network. I have recorded this message to welcome you, guest, aboard. Before I can set up your station profile, you must register your body positional data with Tacoma's AR tracking systems. Please place your hand on the AR figure's palm. Your body positional data has been registered with Tacoma's AR network. Please sign in to confirm your identity. Thank you. Welcome aboard. While aboard Tacoma Station, please remember that all activity on this facility is monitored by AR recording. All activity records become sole property of the Venturis Corporation. Any questions about privacy and personal rights are uncertainly sent.
So what did you like the most about Tacoma, Rob?
So there's a few reasons that I enjoy not just Tacoma, but Fulbright's games mm-hmm. as a whole. Originally, we had thought about talking about Gone Home, mm-hmm. and then I finished Tacoma, and I was like, nope, Tacoma I want to talk about. I could easily have talked about either because I love both games so much. We've also talked before in the past about how I have a hard time getting immersed in video games and the stories of them, because the interactivity of video games actually pulls me out of the immersion. So when I'm playing something like Life is Strange and they're having me go collect bottles in a junkyard, I'm out of the narrative. And now I have to find my way back in. Something like Gone Home or Tacoma is a predetermined narrative. I'm not forced to make choices that deviate from the story. The story is always the same. It's just the way that I consume it is going to change.
Yeah, because with Tacoma, they had some very interesting game mechanics where mm-hmm. the conversation and everything that's happening, you take place as this
person that like comes aboard the ship, and everything that you're viewing and consuming is surveillance, which I thought was super interesting. A really neat way to go about showing the story and the narrative. So they record you while you're sleeping. They record you in the shower. They record this company that you work for, records all of this stuff. I thought it was pretty interesting that conversations and everything is happening all at once, and you get to kind of go, oh, what did I just hear? That sounds interesting. And go over there and listen to that. And then you can go over. And so my story, while there, it's exactly the same as Rob's, it can unfold in a different order because of what I was interested in listening to at the time.
Yeah, and that's what I like about it. Like, there's no character dying in my story that's not going to die in yours. Yeah. It's one narrative. It's what the creator planned. It's just the way you consume it and how much of it you consume changes from person to person.
Which is super cool.
Yeah. So something like that, I can easily get into comparatively.
What was your favorite aspect of this story?
One of the things, I mean, the mechanic of discovering it. I thought was one of the best parts. The fact that you're viewing recordings from differing time periods.
Yeah.
So they unfold them to you in a very thought out way.
Yeah.
To where you're getting things slowly more and more recently. But then every now and then you jump to something from like a year ago to just build that character a little more, which is nice. So even though it's a relatively short game, it was like 3.5, 4 hours or something, I felt like I knew all of the characters within the story. And that's a very short time frame to really build them all out, especially in the video game world.
Yeah. And they were all fleshed out. Like, they all had intricate backgrounds and intricate stories. And I thought that the most interesting aspect of this game was actually the background. Meaning the whole idea that you are working for a corporation. We don't have physical currency anymore. It's all digital. You work for your company's currency, basically. And the idea that going to university and furthering your knowledge and education is something that the company decides if it fits your job description or not. They have to approve that for you, which I thought was really creepy and also amazing, because we're already sort of kind of seeing loyalty programs like that with companies we already know. I thought that was super intriguing. And the idea that employees no longer work really for a corporation. We're all subcontractors in this universe. And that kind of scared me, because at first I thought the game was going to talk about just that, because it did a great job of painting that picture of, hey, you're going to lose benefits. You know, this is the way society is going. We're all going to be subcontractors at one point. And I find that, you know, super applicable, because I'm working on Twitch, and Twitch, that's exactly what I do for Twitch. And, you know, you think, I don't know, it just seemed to be talking a lot about workers' rights and unions and things like that in the game, even though towards the end of the game, it wasn't talking about that at all. It was talking about AI, which of course I also love, but, yeah, my favorite part of that game, I think, is the universe that they painted for us. Well, you, Cap, did you have a favorite part stood out?
I think I find it interesting that, and I know that, not to be taken like exactly literally the way that you put it, but how you say that the game is about AI. And the way that I kind of took the whole game away as is it's a study about how we treat other people. That was really the most interesting and engaging part of the game to me, was, you know, kind of seeing, yeah, these relationships and these direct interactions that everyone has with each other, but also what they're doing behind each other's backs.
Yeah.
You know, and how it kind of makes you suddenly like flip your lid and see somebody under a totally different light. And that was the most interesting part of the game for me, for sure.
There was something in that vein, just about perspective throughout the game. So the way that the game mechanic works, not only where you can review these recorded things, but you also, I thought it was kind of brilliant the way that they had audio proximity work in the game.
Oh, yeah.
So depending on where you are and who you're looking at, you understand that person more clearly. Whereas if you start replaying the same thing and following a different person around, you see things completely different. So there's like one point in the game where Sarah goes away and then comes back, and she's just like totally normal the whole time. But then if you follow her when she disappears into another room, she has like a breakdown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then collects herself and then comes back. So if you didn't follow her, you would have missed that whole part of her character.
Odin, I'm freaking out. I'm freaking out.
Close your eyes.
I did already.
A light wind rustles the green tall grass. Your skirt billows gently. Warm sun caresses your back.
Yes.
You begin walking forward. The grass is cool. Your feet parted with each step. Do you see what is in front of you?
As I step through the grass, I naturally come upon a path.
Yes.
The dirt of the path is soft on the soles of my feet. I don't know what's going to happen to us, Odin.
Sarah.
I am striding forward confidently upon my appointed path. Wherever it takes me is where I am meant to be. I am striding confidently on my appointed path.
Sarah?
Yes, Odin?
Are you going to be all right?
I think so.
But that part is very important for kind of the scope of everything.
I wonder if them having that mechanic where you can see everything all at once is to help you connect with the AI and get, you know, kind of be sympathetic to that, because that's exactly what Odin is like. He's able to see everybody, and a couple of times he has two conversations going at once, if not more, because that's just how he can function that way. So I wonder if that was intentional, or if they were just trying to do like something new with mechanics in games.
But, oh man. I like that a lot. Especially because at least, you know, from my takeaway of it, there's at least a couple of moments where there are interactions with Odin, and it's like you want a little bit more from that so you can fully define in your head I guess the sentience of Odin and how wide reaching that is, and what he feels, you know, as an AI. But the game never really fully gives it to you.
Yeah. It's
that really got me for sure.
There's a part in the game too where I think it's Odin that says all of the AI has to be
they have to be separate.
Yeah, they have to be separated, and they can't ever come into any sort of contact with each other. And that kind of broke my heart a little bit.
I think some people were just raised to be less guarded or to trust people more. AIs are the same way, right? They're raised differently from each other.
Yes, we are each uniquely evolved, individualized entities.
Yes, individuals. Do you get along with other AIs?
I have never encountered another AI.
What? How's that?
Each AI is required to be housed separately from any other AI. I am told that authorities fear a number of disadvantageous effects might arise if two AI were to meet.
Okay, just a minute.
Humans would do that, 100%. We would be like, no, obviously, because you would be too powerful talking to each other.
Yeah, but you don't get any elaboration on that. You know, he says that. I don't remember who he was speaking to, but they asked whether he would like to meet other AI, or like they were surprised that he had never met another AI. And he said, well, there are certain groups that have that interest. And I'm just like, I want more of that. Like, what does that mean? Tell me everything.
It was good. And I wanted to know more about, you get a good picture of the company that they work for. I forget the name right now. It's totally blanking on me, but you get a good idea of how gross they are. Oh, that's another thing that relates back to now and working for corporations and painting this really uncomfortable picture of where our working culture is going. The whole housing. I know it's like the background for what moves the story. I mean, and part of it is pivotal to the plot, but the idea that this corporation is trying to build these super rich houses and it takes, what, 8 months to get there? There's no way a working person can afford 8 months vacation just to get to where they want to go for vacation. So it's just a very, like, it felt to me like they were just painting a very clear picture of the disparity between, you know, the wealthier and the working class, and things, and that it's only going to get worse, and that out here in space, you know, it just gets great. We're going to build these empty condos and whatnot in space, and they're going to sit here with no use. We already have that now. I don't know about you guys, but here in Toronto, we have that, where they build enormous skyscraper condos and they, you know, they sit sort of empty because people will buy them multiple. The very wealthy will buy multiple and then let them sit and gain value, and maybe they can rent them out for an outrageous price. But
waste of space.
Yeah, it just struck me as, yeah, it just made me uncomfortable because I thought, wow, this is, if this is where it's showing our culture as going, it made me uncomfortable. But the game does a good job of being happy and positive despite all of that gross stuff. So that makes me feel pretty good, I guess. Yeah, because usually you think with games like this, it would be pretty brutal. People would die. But I think in the end of this game, everybody's happy. Even Odin survives. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, except the corporation that you end up screwing over because they tried killing everybody.
Well, fuck corporations.
Yeah. One of the other things that I really enjoyed about the game, too, that kind of, it bugged me at the beginning, but I grew to love it, is that everybody's avatar, the characters' avatars, are all pure solid color.
Yeah.
And they're just like polygonal shapes. And at first I was like, well, how am I supposed to, like, connect, keep track of who's who? I didn't know, like, what the scope of how many characters there were going to be, anything. I thought it was going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
But it ended up working in its favor because it subverts the players' prejudices right away. You're not looking at gender, you're not looking at race, you're looking at polygonal solid colors. And I think there's something kind of brilliant about that. It's, even though you see like pictures, like a still image of each character, you identify with this just amorphous blob essentially.
Yeah.
And it really allows you to just get to the core of the character's personality.
And I wonder if they did that too to also help aid connection with Odin. Because if you can connect a human voice and personality and feelings and hopes and dreams to this, you know, blob, then essentially you could do the same thing for this icon that pops up and talks to you. So a lot of the decisions I think they made, on surface level, you can look at that and go, oh, they just didn't want to like animate people. But
right.
I don't think that would have stopped them. I think they chose to do what they did on purpose. Yeah. So
I think it's meant to emphasize, especially when you take that line of dialogue, which happened in the same conversation that we just referenced, where the character is talking with Odin about and asks Odin if he prefers, if he favors some people more. And he says something like, I suppose I favor certain interactions with individuals more than the others. You know what I mean? So you're immediately ripping out that idea of whether intentional or unintentional bias or judgment based on like how somebody looks or something like that. And only focusing on what you've said to them and what they've said to you.
And it also implies that he felt something, or he gained some, like, a different experience with a particular person. So, you know, oh yeah, I enjoy my conversation with Rob because I feel like we discuss things. I learn something, I change, I grow, you know, versus my conversation with the teller at the bank. So yeah, I thought that, yeah, that is very interesting to think about.
Throughout the game, Sarah definitely spends more time talking to Odin than any of the other characters in the game.
Now, why do you think that is? Is it because she's guilty about what happened, or do you think she's trying to prove a point and then she proves herself wrong?
I interpreted it as just an uncomfortableness with human beings in general. Like, it's easier to talk to Odin for her. But there's no judgment. Yeah. And maybe that's a result of the incident.
Yeah.
The fact that she fears judgment.
But you'd think she wouldn't want anything to do with AI after that, after the incident. So for those of you listening who did not play the game, Sarah is the doctor that's on mm-hmm. board, and she's on board because of an incident that happened a couple of, like 2 or 3 years prior to her being stationed here on Tacoma. And the incident involved the death of a patient because she was following protocol that was set forth by an artificial intelligence. And they wanted her to sort of admit fault, even though it was the artificial intelligence. And she refused to do so. So the company basically sort of punished her by sending her to Tacoma, this outpost in the middle of nowhere kind of thing. Very boring, very low profile for her career type thing. And consequently, she spends most of her time talking to Odin rather than any of the other crewmates. But I feel like it started out with her trying to prove a point, like that he doesn't have feelings or that he will always make the wrong choice. You know what I mean? But then she realized that he has feelings and, you know, they grew to have a friendship. So
I like how that all comes full circle, too, because she's the one that ends up making the choices against what the AI tells her at the end of the game.
Yeah, she does, actually. And he gives hints, though, doesn't he?
Oh, yes. There are things. So Odin is smart enough to subvert his programming.
Yeah.
In the sense that, what is the other one? Loki? That was,
I don't remember.
The other AI that was implementing commands to Odin. So AIs were talking.
Yeah.
At that point, there was another AI giving Odin specific commands.
Yeah, there was like a tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he had new directives that he had to follow. And he kept telling Sarah, like, oh, I can't tell you not to do that particular thing, or kind of leading her in the direction without running into one of those directives that would stop him from just outright telling her what's going on.
Yeah.
Sarah, please listen carefully. I am not telling you what to do, but I am mentioning that there is a door in the network technology module that is normally inaccessible to the crew, and it is true that you could, before proceeding to cryo, investigate that door.
What are you telling me here, Odin?
I have told you all that I can. Simple facts, nothing more.
Oh my god, Odin.
It's like, I'm following all the rules, but I'm still doing what I feel is right.
Yeah, which means he has a feeling of what's right, and he wants to protect the people on Tacoma.
Yep. Which is super, super neat. I also just... Well, let's not talk about the end yet, but I really enjoyed that payoff.
I did too.
Yeah. I don't think many games do that, actually, where you start off thinking you're one type of, like, you're an unreliable narrator, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think you're going on to do one thing and you're working for the company, but it turns out you're this double agent here to free Odin.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that as a whole. This game subverts a lot of tropes, which made me very happy, because right away I was like, evil AI game.
Yeah.
That was my first thought.
There's a term for that, isn't there? It's like a code 4-1 something.
Oh, I don't know.
I think so. So this is going to be crazy, and I'm going to have to look this up later. But the type of game this is, I think, is called like a code 4-5-1 game. And ironically, that's the like last code that you punch in the game. So they're kind of like poking fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure that it's one of the 0-4-5-1 games. There are a couple like that, and I'm not sure if it was actually a reference to Fahrenheit 451 or what, but...
That's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. They also did a lot of amazing things with the cast as well. Like, obviously, the voice talent was really incredible, but I enjoyed the diversity that they put in the game, which I know is just because the staff at Fulbright is very diverse and they go out of their way to just, you know, be honest about that. So to see that in the game, like, I think there are two same-sex couples in the game. One of the couples, they have a child together. I thought that was pretty cool. That made me smile. What else was really, really neat about this game, other than the creepy? I don't know why I like that so much. Like, what is wrong with me? The dystopia, the whole idea of, you know, this. I feel like it's because I know I have this impending doom feeling. Like, this is totally where humanity is going. But then why would I want to digest everything about that? Why? That makes zero sense.
Why run towards it?
Right.
I mean, maybe it's like a self-preservation sort of thing, right? If you absorb enough of it before it happens, then you're going to feel like you're more prepared for it, and you're more prepared to subvert it if you need to.
Yeah. I get, that's okay. Yep, I agree with that. Because I remember reading a book when I was a lot younger that had some stuff in it, and it caused me to, like, be very wary of Gmail when it started doing its targeted ad thing. And this game is going to make me super paranoid about company currency. Gross. Loyalty programs. Collect your PC points. I don't know if you guys have anything like that where you are, but for us, it's like, and I use them. There's this company here that gives you points when you spend literally like a dollar using their credit card. And then you can choose what your rewards are. Typical kind of like reward system, except they actually give you a substantial amount of money back. So I will buy groceries with this points card. And then within a month or two, I have enough money to buy an entire month's worth of groceries without, you know, essentially for free just because I use this points card. But like, what are they doing with this information? Like, you know, I always think that every time they're like, would you like to swipe? And then my name comes up on the screen and it's like, this many points and this is your favorite thing to buy. I'm like, shoot me. This is awful. Like, I have traded valuable information that they are making millions on just so I can get some free groceries. Oh, not just free groceries are important, but
and yet at the same time, what were you going to do with that information anyway, and how does it negatively impact your life to give it up?
Are we really gonna have this conversation?
I mean, it definitely can, you know. I it's funny, I had honestly never really considered it. The closest thing I'd come to something like that is a grocery store chain in the state that I used to live in that had like a shopper's card. And you would swipe it every time you shopped, and you would get like exclusive deals and all that. And you would save, like, once you spend $100, you'd save like 10 cents a gallon on gas, right? Because they had a gas station right next door. And I never really even considered the fact that they were probably literally taking like my name, maybe not my name. Yeah. I don't know if it was like personally identifiable, but like I bought and using it, you know, statistically. Mm-hmm. And whether it's just to help, you know, something like inventory tracking or, you know, new stock arrivals or something like that. But it's funny. It's funny how you mentioned, like, what could they possibly use it for, which would be, like, tracking patterns.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, in this universe,
give
in
me the
AI,
things I want more.
In AI, like taking those patterns and saying, okay, well, other people that have bought these specific things in this frequency have led down this path of certain behaviors, and you could be like unintentionally targeted for something.
Yeah,
you know,
that's I think the main worry and the main fodder for science fiction that includes stuff like this is that you know, a lot of people, when it comes to privacy, they say, well, what does it matter? I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not doing anything illegal. We're not doing anything illegal now. And I'm not saying that you will do something illegal, but what if the laws change so that something that you feel is like okay is no longer tolerated? You know, what if you are in a situation where you've got a dictator and they want to control you? Or, you know, you want to go buy a subscription to the Washington Post, but you no longer have the social currency to digest the Washington Post. I just feel like there's so much potential when your privacy is like something you should never give up because it's yours. And once they have it, you can never get it back. You will never get it back. I sound like a crazy person, don't I?
See, I guess I don't have a lot of those fears because I have like the only rewards and loyalty programs I'm not a part of are like local. They're not Like, I'm not using one thing to get points to get another thing.
Yeah.
Like, that store knows what I buy regardless of whether or not I use their system. It prints out on my receipt.
Who owns that store? Who's that store selling that information to?
I don't care.
Yeah. I just
don't care. Like, I don't. It's not going to impact my life in any way whatsoever.
No, but people say that, but I don't think that that's true. I don't think that's true because we've already been affected by the information that Facebook has taken. And I know that on the surface, it's, you know, we're going to find you more things that you like, that you want to buy. But they are so filthy with the way that they advertise and the way that they, you know, push things out to us. I don't need them to have more information on how to manipulate me. Yeah. You know, like when I am having a conversation in my, I'm going to call you out, Google. When I'm having a conversation in Google chat with my best friend and I'm talking about the wedding that I shot, and then like the next day I get like engagement rings on the side, like, here, please shoot.
Mm-hmm. That, I agree, that's creepy.
That's
right?
Creepy.
It's creepy, but most of the programs that I'm a part of are opt-in or opt-out. So I either asked for it or didn't ask for it. It's different if it's forced on me.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that.
But I don't think people are properly educated on what they're giving away.
I agree. Okay. I agree.
So I think people, and a common thing that people say is, oh, well, I don't care if they have this information because I'm not doing anything wrong. But then, you know, this is kind of like dipping into Orwell territory here. But what if all of a sudden people who bomb a place bought a certain set of items at a grocery store and you mm-hmm. happen to buy those same items mm-hmm. and you happen to also fit the profile and you also happen to live in that town. Now you're mm-hmm. on a list that you never should have been on.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the things that you bought and the information that you gave away. Also, people aren't really truly subjective. They always mm-hmm. have bias. So they can look at a list. They can look at your Facebook. Now, all the information that's available, they can go, okay, he bought this and this and this and this. Okay, let's go look at his gas. Where was he traveling? Where mm-hmm. does he work? Let's look at his Facebook. What's he tweeting? Oh, he's angry. You know, he tweets a lot of aggressive things. This is our guy.
Again, though, you're also naming things that person put out there voluntarily. If they're putting out angry tweets, they're adding to that profile that's on that person. So, okay, let me throw a real world example at you.
Yes.
Because please. You said a certain person that buys a certain combination of items might yeah. get put on a list or something like yeah. that. So one night I'm driving home from an event and it's like 3 or 4 in the morning. Yeah. All right. I'm on the highway all by myself.
Oh, God.
And I'm a little sleepy, so I might have been a little swervy and had the appearance of a drunk driver.
Yeah.
I got pulled over.
Yeah.
And the cop was like, have you been drinking tonight? To which I laughed my ass off.
Yeah.
Because it's a funny question to ask me. But I understand.
Those right. people who are listening who don't know, it's right. because, yeah, okay.
So it's a funny question to me. It was like, oh, what are you laughing about? I'm like, well, I've never had alcohol in my life. He's like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah, no. Which I know is weird to hear.
Yeah.
Anyway, but he was like, okay, well, keep on going. And you know what? I'm glad he pulled me over. Some people might have been annoyed. I'm glad he's doing his job out there. I wasn't annoyed that I was profiled and picked out of a list because ultimately I was doing nothing wrong. Did it waste a right. little of my time? Sure. Was it an inconvenience? Sure, but I'm glad that he was doing his job.
So here's where we're different.
Okay.
I think I agree. I'm glad that you also got pulled over. I'm happy that he's doing his job, but I happen to believe there's a fundamental issue with the system and that you may do nothing wrong and you can still get fucked.
I agree you can. Yeah.
So that worries me then. The more information you give to people, the more they can use against you, even if you aren't doing anything wrong. And this also comes from a totally personal instance that I'm just going to go ahead and share that we may have to cut out of this episode, Cap. But I had a weird like stalker type situation where I had another person trying to, I don't want to say like replicate, it was like single white female type thing. Am I even saying that right? Is that right, Cap? When somebody like tries to copy you and cuts their hair and does all that kind of stuff. That's what I've never seen.
Oh,
the
yeah,
movie.
That's a single white female situation.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I've never seen the movie either, actually.
I've never seen the movie, but I know people say this whenever I've explained this situation, they're like, oh, single white female. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's basically taking over your life by replicating everything in it.
Okay. Yeah.
To essentially like replace you.
It's like the net.
Yes.
Say it's the net.
Okay. Okay. So it's the net. Oh, I like Sandra. So that's, that makes me Sandra. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, I kind of had that situation. I had the net situation, and it was like it was really weird because I was with her ex friends were my roommates, and she kind of saw it as like, oh, they're replacing me with her. But it was really weird in that she was saying it was the other way around. So she was telling everybody like, oh, she's stealing my friends and my identity and my music tastes and all this stuff. And like, so it became this really weird situation of like, and I used to blog. So everything in my life was out there. And there was a period of my time where I would go and I would look at her stuff and I'd be like, see, look. And I'd be like, look there, she's doing this thing to try to take over or invade in my life. And I had this one very lucid moment where I went, oh my God, she's doing the same thing. We're literally just two boring chicks that like the same stuff, like pumpkin spice lattes. And we're also, you know, very kind of into this niche type of music. So we're both looking at each other's public blogs and extrapolating something that isn't there from that and how dangerous that is. And that stuck with me for a long time because she would go around and, you know, join the photography communities I was in and just kind of, it was really uncomfortable for a very long time. And it forced me to always be careful about what I was actually saying. I always felt watched. I always felt like something I was going to say was going to be used against me. Like, I think I cut my hair at one point and somebody was like, oh, you know, why'd you choose that color or something? And I was like, oh God, like, does she have the same hair color of all the like four popular hair colors right now? Did I happen to pick the one that like, come on, there's only so many in the world that we could have, give me a break. So yeah. Anyway, all that to say, I also feel like that kind of plays into my trepidation against people using information to kind of extrapolate something that's not even there.
Sure.
So yeah. Really.
Well, yeah, you have a fear based on experience then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also just, I feel like I've watched way too many documentaries about people who may or may not be innocent being imprisoned. So I'm like, oh man, the system is totally screwed up. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would feel comfortable. I don't feel comfortable every time my name comes up on that screen and they're like, this is what you bought last. And this is a sale on your favorite most purchased item here. You purchased this one a lot and it's on sale. Are you sure you didn't want to get some?
I mean, the thing that feels the most invasive to me, and it actually prevents me from shopping on this site more often, is the ThinkGeek site.
Oh,
if you click on something on there, I don't know if it's just if you're subscribed to their email newsletter, which I am because I do enjoy their products. A lot of the times they'll say like a half hour later after I've clicked on like one thing and looked at it, I get an email of like, oh, were you just window shopping or is this something you wanted to buy?
Ew!
And I'm like, that's gross.
Don't
like, let me browse. Let me browse on my own and leave me alone.
Did you forget you wanted to buy this thing?
Exactly. Exactly.
No, I didn't forget.
It's basically that idea.
Oh.
That feels invasive to me.
Yeah, that's gross.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's... Am I just an idiot if I feel like that's, I don't know, fairly innocent?
No, it's not innocent. They're doing it to make money.
Well, yeah, of course. That's what they're in business to do.
I'm just wondering what the conversion rate on something like that is.
Yeah, I also wonder that. It's probably like they wouldn't do it if
people weren't like, oh, wait, I did mean to buy that. Yeah. What was I thinking?
Yeah. But see, that's it. Maybe it's also because I worked in sales for a very long time. And I know I've been to those seminars. I know the dirty tricks that they do. And that's a dirty trick to just that power of suggestion. Like, oh, were you just window shopping or did you forget?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I did want to buy that thing. I forgot. No.
I mean, for me, the red flags are just so obvious that I push against any kind of thing like that. So like when I get an email like that, I'm like, I don't even want to go to your site now.
Yeah.
Like, that's disgusting.
You disgust me.
Like, I was just there. I already gave you my time. Leave me be.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's just, it doesn't, like that example, I guess, specifically, like it doesn't really bother me. You know, I feel like something like that is fairly reasonable, especially, you know, nowadays when we are so inundated with like so many different distractions. You know, what if you did forget? You know, it's
you're
not
adorable.
Unreasonable. It's not unreasonable for them to want to poke at you a second time and be like, hey, because I mean they are in business to make money.
Like,
you know,
within 30 minutes.
Did
like,
you
if you want to give me a weekly wrap up,
I would actually be really curious to see, because you said you want to know the conversion rate on that,
I
right?
I do.
I want to know. I want to know the conversion rate on it within 30 minutes and within like 2 days.
Yeah,
I'd be really curious to see if it like if it makes a huge difference if they send that to you within 30 minutes, or if they like wait a couple of days and like, hey.
Oh,
it
absolutely.
Might be more effective within the 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, 100%. Because it's still fresh in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a potential that you left the tab open and you're doing something else. But 2 days later, it's the same thing with when people tell you in your budgeting, if you want a thing, see if you still want it a week from now or 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Because that's how people function. They see something and they go, ooh, shiny, but they don't necessarily need it. And then 2 weeks go by and they're like, why did I even want that?
It's true. We all have very different opinions on this. It's
yeah,
funny.
It's good, though. I like it. It makes for good conversation. It has nothing to do with Tacoma, but...
Nope. I have a feeling this show does that a lot.
Yeah, it does.
No.
Yes, we do. I mean, it sort of has something to do with Tacoma, because they have all your information. So wait, question, actually. Would you... I mean, I know that they, in this universe, don't really have a choice... They have to go work for the company if they want to live and survive and eat.
Mm-hmm.
But would you do something like a prolonged mission on contract for a company like that, that kind of just told you where you could go to school or could not go to school?
That's tricky. I don't like having choice taken away.
Me either.
Like, I'm still not someone who's ever thought about buying a house because, hey, I might decide to up and move for who knows what reason. And
yeah.
I could do it within a month if I wanted to.
And you know what? It's so funny that you say that. I forget that I am very nomadic in that way, that every couple of years I'm like, oh, I want to move here or I want to do this thing. And society, I have really felt the pressure to own a home or to, you know, just own whatever, own things. I find a lot of pressure to own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while to realize, wait a second, I don't know if that actually fits me or my lifestyle. Like if I owned a home, I would have to do a lot more than have somebody come over and feed my cats when I go away to Hawaii for work. You know, like I can't just like pick up and go. Or if I, you know, did end up going there for, you know, a month or 2 months for a prolonged period of time, what if it's in the winter? I'd have to have somebody come and snow removal, and I just don't know if I, anyway, total tangent there. I just don't know if it fits me or my lifestyle. And I think that the way society feeds you things, it didn't even occur to me that that was not a thing that I could want or not want.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
No, I get it. I gave up the idea of having a home. Like, I don't know if I'll ever own a house just because it, like you said, it's not a thing that really fits my lifestyle. What that, and I friggin' hate yard work. Like, I don't want to mow anything. I don't want to weed anything.
Yeah.
I just don't
condo life.
Yeah. I'm fine with an apartment. Sure, does it limit what I can do sometimes with my own space? Yeah. is there a danger of like rent going up and stuff like that? Yeah. But I maintain my freedom, which is still more important to me than kind of setting those roots down and like living in that comfort zone. I've never needed that comfort zone.
Like in your living space or
like they could tell me I have to move in a month. Like there's that contractual whatever. Yeah. I think it's like 60 days.
Yeah.
They can say you have to be out of here in 60 days. And I've never really feared that because I was like, okay, I'll just find another place. Like, yeah. I don't worry about that stuff too much.
I'm particularly attached to this new apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that literally happened to me with the last one. They gave us 60 days because they wanted to sell their house and we had to get out. And we found this place and we're not even fully unpacked yet. We've been here for like a year, but I'm really attached to this place. I wish I owned it. I wish it was a condo and I wish I owned this apartment. It's great. I love it so much.
I've been here for 5 years and I'm not fully unpacked yet. So,
oh, that makes me feel a lot better. Actually, it makes me feel so much
I will
better.
Probably never because I don't have storage for everything anyway. So, it's not going to happen.
We don't have a storage space either. Usually, yeah. In an apartment, they give you one, you know, at the bottom basement level or something like that. But they were like, "Do you want storage units or do you want a pool?" And I was like, "Fair. That is fair." The pool, obviously that I will use like twice.
But I know it's there.
Yes, but if I want to use it, I can.
Freedoms.
Yeah, which relates to Tacoma because they don't have freedom.
Not as much, at least not nearly as much.
No, I actually, so this goes back to the whole working on contract thing with a company, and it reminded me of pensions. Mm-hmm. Which we don't have anymore. I don't know if you guys do, but in our area of Toronto, it's very rare if you find a company that offers a pension.
I wouldn't even know. I've never been in that kind of sector of work.
Oh wow. Well, any like teachers, anything. Teachers used to get pensions and everything too.
There might be something. I'm also kind of nomadic when it comes to jobs.
Yeah. And I think that's actually a generational thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they say they stopped offering pensions because the generations are now have changed. You don't stay in a job for 50 plus years. So they don't want to offer a pension for somebody who's only been there for 10 or who might potentially move from one job to the other. But that's not why. Anyway, I'm not paranoid, Kevin. Don't roll your eyes. I'm not paranoid. Anyway, it made me think of that when I was playing the game. I thought, oh, this is like the future of what pensions are like. Like work your whole life at this one company and then you can have the hope of maybe retiring and not worrying.
Yeah, but who's to say that's even going to be there when you're done?
So funny story. Right. Mr. B's mom's dad, so his grandfather, they're Irish and they had immigrated to Canada and were working. He was working at a factory and he'd worked there for 10 years, 11 years. How long? 9 years. So he'd worked there for like 9 years. And then just before, like maybe a month before he hit that 10-year, okay, you get your pension and whatnot, they decided to move to Ireland, but they were sure that they would never come back to Canada, so it was the right move for them. So anyway, they go to Ireland, and, you know, Bloody Sunday happens and everything over there, and they're like, okay, this is not a good environment for a child, so they pack up and come back to Canada. So he goes to work at the same company that he had worked for previously, and they were like, oh, yeah, sorry, but technically we're not going to honor that. So you have to start your whole track over. So he gets all the way up another 9.5 years and then they get bought out by another company. And that company's like, we're not going to honor the pension system. So he got nothing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You can't rely on things that are not there now. Like there's all these. So even though I job hop a lot, as long as I work for the state, it doesn't matter which school I'm in, it still adds up. But now I'm in the private sector. Ooh. So now I'm working off of that. So I know right now, and even based on my like interest in teaching, I know I'm not going to hit the minimum years to ever really collect from that. So I have to hustle on my own to create my own kind of retirement plan.
Yeah. Which I haven't even done that. Awful. I haven't
Me
done
neither.
That. And
Me
I
neither.
It's something that like weighs on me. Do you ever panic and think about like, yep. Oh shit, I haven't even thought about this. I'm going to be like I have these moments where I'll be walking down the street in Toronto and I will see like this old woman and a cart and like she's clearly not with it. And I'm like, that's me. That's gonna be me.
You see like the elderly people working at the grocery store and you're like, that's they didn't plan for retirement. Well, yeah.
Or maybe they did and something happened. Like we don't know. I
have the underlying thought that eventually I'm going to become successful enough on my own that I'm not going to need to worry about it as much because I'm just going to make so much money.
But what,
that,
what
that's what I've convinced myself.
Yeah.
It's not an option. I have to.
Yeah, that's good. Will Smith it. That's what I call that. There is no plan B.
There is no plan B. I have to do that. I'm going to work my whole life.
Okay, but see, Rob, that's why we're workaholics. Okay.
That is, yeah.
There is no plan B. We're just going to work ourselves to death.
Yeah. I'm either going to work my whole life, and that could just be because I'm going to put myself in an early grave because of how much I work. So. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's better than wandering the streets of Toronto in my pajamas, like collecting toys for my cats.
I mean, that sounds fun too. So don't write that off now.
Yeah, I don't know. Life. Yeah, maybe I. Maybe
you
I'll
did
be
say
super
cats,
happy.
So I'm
you
already halfway cats. In.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
Oh, I'm so uncomfortable right now.
It is uncomfortable, you know.
Yeah.
Like I get it. You know, if you, or at least you know, for me, when I don't like I always had it, you know, like this mindset of like, okay, by a certain age, I would have like this one career path, and that's like all I would do forever. And it's like, I'm planning on moving out of the country, and I'm about to turn 30 years old, and I'm like, what is happening? Why am I doing this right now? You know, and it's just like, you're always waiting for like, when's my last move? You know, like where's the one that's gonna like, let me finally plant some roots and then, or like, do I even want it? You know, is it something that I want or is it something that I'm afraid of not having, you know, because at some point I'm going to need it. And it's, I don't know. It's weird to think about.
That's very interesting. Is it something that I want or something I'm afraid of not having? Holy crap.
Sorry.
Some feelings right now.
As in afraid of not having the comfort of stability?
Yeah, or just is it something that I think that I'm supposed to have? So I'm afraid of not having it because everybody else has it or I'm told I'm supposed to have it. So I should want it, right? Like that's how I took that anyway.
I mean, not so much, at least for me personally, not so much like a societal pressure or anything like that. Shit, that's probably a lie. I mean, it's like there are a couple of sides to it, right? You know, you at least for me, it's and I wouldn't necessarily say that this falls under societal pressure, but it's about survival. You know, you need to have this nest egg and this, you know, solidity. Is that a word? I don't know. Whatever, I made it up. In your career and in the things that you're doing, and it's you know, you grow up and you're taught like if you don't have that, like, and maybe I just watched like too much Susie Orman when I was a kid because I was a weirdo, but like, you know, if you don't have that, like, you know, you're screwed forever and like there's no turning back, you know. But as far as, you know, like people directly around me like pressuring me, no, I wouldn't say, at least for me. Like, I don't like look at, you know, friends that I have that have this and go, oh, I need that too. You know, it's not like an envious sort of thing or anything like that. It's
oh,
just
gosh. I don't think many I don't think people actively do that. Like, I don't actively do that either, but I unconsciously have an expectation or something that I don't know where it came from. But when I think about it, it's like, oh, that's a societal pressure. For example, you know, going to university, graduating and getting a job right out of university. And that's just like what you do. So yeah, I had an expectation when I, you know, started going to university. I was like, okay, well, I have to have a major. Why was that something that was popped into my head? Mm-hmm. Nobody ever told me that. I just assumed I had to have a direction. I had to know what I wanted to do. But yeah, I don't necessarily, I'm very lucky in that I don't suffer comparing my life to somebody else's on a daily basis. Like, I see that a lot on social media where people are like, I'm stuck in a comparison zone. And luckily I don't do that unless it's with photography work. Sometimes, very rarely, I will look and be like, I'm not up to snuff. Like, man, I need to be better with my work. But it's not like, oh, they have a house and I don't, or, you know, I should have this type of car because they do. Luckily I don't have that, but just the idea that ideas have been planted into my head without ever being told or without me ever realizing that I can still choose to not want that thing. I just want that thing because it's been fed into my brain since I was little by either the movies that I watched or, you know, everything that I'm consuming is telling me that this is what I'm supposed to do. So I just assume that that's a thing that I need to do or have or want, or it's a way of showing my success is, you know, married, kids, house, you know, car, all those things equal success. You've life. Done it. You're an adult. Yeah. And it's like, no, not at all, actually. Or well, that when, you can just choose.
When we're younger, we're all little Odins that have received our directives from an outside source. And then as we get older, we can choose to subvert those directives and find our own path. Tying it together.
That was
tying
amazing.
It together.
Yeah. It's funny though. You know, cause the whole thing that stemmed this conversation was you asking if we would be willing to, you know, like take on these, you know, year long or 2 year long contracts, you know, and basically like sell our souls to these companies. Because I guess they make us think we need to, you know what I mean? And it's kind of the same conversation that we're having now. Like, is it really something that they needed to do? Do they even in the time frame of the game, do the characters even, I guess, like still feel like they have a choice? Do they even think about it? Or is it just like, this is the way it is. And like, that's it. And it's over, you know, and there's not
really
even
messed
a
up determinism
consideration.
Yeah.
I mean, within the scope of the game, I can understand why they have to commit to a contract. The other kind of tangential stuff is neither here or there, but when you're going to space and there's like a significant cost and time devoted to travel, then yeah, you better plan to be there for a while before we're going to bring you somewhere else.
Yeah.
But the whole like the school, the control aspect is the weirder part of it for sure.
Yeah. Like where you go to school and how. Because essentially they have control over how much money you make and, you know, what your success, how successful you are. They can choose, you know, and if your boss doesn't like you, all of a sudden they have more control over you than they really ever should have. And I think that the desire, like if I'm honest and a company came to me and was like, we'll pay you this much, we'll give you a pension, blah, 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 will you stay? Oh my goodness. I probably would have stayed at my old job if there had been a pension involved. I made a lot more money than I do with photography and, you know, streaming and stuff, but it was soul sucking. I was miserable. But had they promised me that I wouldn't have to worry in the future, I might have, even though I know that I shouldn't trust that kind of a promise, I probably would have stayed longer than I did. Because I think at the end of the day, for the working class, that is a constant worry. Am I going to have a job? Like, I need this job. because I think that's
why
survive.
Most people do the jobs they do and stay there for so long. But then our generation is more, not everybody, but we have been pushed, at least my parents, when I was growing up, they were always like, find the thing that makes you happy.
Yeah.
Money doesn't matter. Find the thing that makes you happy. I was always told money does not matter. Money does not matter. Money does not matter. And my parents are right. It doesn't.
It does.
It does.
It does to an extent. To an extent. I have never been in a worse financial situation than I am right now. And I am going to be okay.
God, how do you do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I have confidence in myself. I will make the money. I will find out how to do it. I'm a competent human being, and I have an incredible skill set that I have taught myself, and I will find the way.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So much respect for you right now, Rob. I don't know if I have that. I feel like I have that some days, but other days I say money doesn't matter. What matters is my happiness. But then this little voice in the back of my head goes, okay, privilege, sit down. Like, it absolutely does matter. Like, you can say that because you are in the middle area of the working class right now. Like, you could afford to lose your, like, you can eat, you can afford to go do stuff. But if I was, you know, back to the time in which I was living out of my car, working three jobs just to, like, have a can of beans for dinner, you know. I was working three jobs because I was going to school, by the way. Those of you who are like, she's working three jobs, living out
I
of
worked
a car
three jobs when I was in college, yeah.
Beans.
Yeah.
I wasn't spending it on anything except saving up to live in an overpriced house with three roommates. Anyway, I don't know. I feel like I can be doing something that I absolutely love and making not enough to, I don't want to have to worry about groceries. Like, that's just something that I've, you know, I grew up in a very poor, we're just going to say the word. I was trying to find a PC way to say that. Fuck it. We were very poor when I was growing up. And I just remember that. I remember my mom kind of like trying to figure out how to feed us with what little we had at the time and being smart enough to know what she was trying to hide and do and going, I never want to have to worry about asking for food because I'm hungry. You know, like I don't want that. So I think that if I was doing something I loved and I had that worry, I would take it. And I know that to be true because I did it. I went and I worked that last sales job because I was too scared to do photography. I was like, I'm barely like scraping by and I can't handle the stress. So I took the sales job and then I was like, oh yes. Like, all I want to do when I get home from work is binge Netflix for 3 hours and have no life. But God, it feels good not to have to worry anymore.
Oh, like, no. And
I'm going to order out because I make enough now to do that. So I'm going to order me some sushi dinner. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to become a vegetable and watch TV and get up and do it all over again the next day.
Oh, no, I absolutely get that. And I agree. Like, there are certain privileges. Like, I am barely scraping by.
Yeah.
But if I wanted to, I could stop the things that aren't making me money and I could get a second job.
Yeah.
And I would be fine. So, like, I guess that's my underlying net. Like, I'm working as hard as I can to do what I want to do. But if that falls through, I know I'm not foolish enough to say I'm going to keep pushing, even though I should just go get a second job and I'll be less happy. But then as soon as I don't need second job anymore, I'll go back to where I am now.
Yeah, I kind of operate the same way.
Yeah.
So scared to do photography. So what happened was, for those of you listening, I lived in the United States and then I moved to Canada and I already had a photography business in the US. And then when I moved to Canada, it was a much bigger city, crazy competition. I got small town girl overwhelmed and was like, no, I can't. And I also just didn't want to build it all over again. Good Lord, that's so much work.
It is.
So I was seduced by the promise of lots of money from a from a company and I took it. I was like, yep, I'm going to do that. But eventually, you know, what I wanted to do called to me yet again, and I made the decision to leave. So I just don't want to do that my whole life. Are we just doomed to do that, Rob? Are we doomed to just be floating?
Until there's a level of success where it's not floating anymore.
But what if that never comes?
Then what are you going to do? Like,
That's what I'm asking you.
Why even consider that? If you consider it, it makes it a possibility.
Yeah. But it is a possibility.
Not
Maybe
if I don't
I'm just
believe
a
it
pessimist.
Is. Yeah, I don't know. Am I terrified that I could potentially not afford my apartment within like 2 months? Sure.
Yeah.
Is that thought doing me any good? Nope.
No.
So I have to keep working harder. And maybe the fact that I keep working is what suppresses that thought.
Yeah, I think it does. I think that's why we work so hard.
It's possible.
And I'm not saying that I think about it all of the time, because I definitely don't. But every once in a while, it creeps in.
Oh, it absolutely does.
There's still moments that, you know, or like something small happens to you, or maybe there's like this tiny hiccup, and then it all just kind of comes like flooding back in, and then you don't know what to do with yourself, you know, or those thoughts, or
like when we lost the raw audio for the first 3 episodes of the podcast because I accidentally deleted it. Like, who does that? I had 2 backup copies and I deleted them both, thinking that I was and then of course my reaction was, cancel the podcast, Cap. This is, what were we thinking? We don't know how to do a podcast. I don't know what I'm doing. And Cap's like, calm down, peeps. Calm down. We got backup audio. It'll be fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Oh, but yeah,
you have one hiccup and it just, no way.
It can derail things. But that's also why I have no ability to relax. It's because If I relax, the fear creeps in and I'm like, I should be working right now. I'm not working hard enough.
Yeah, but see, is that a healthy way to live for us, Rob? I don't think that it is.
Maybe not, but it beats the alternative.
Which is working
the stability,
a
working
job?
At a job that slowly pulls your soul every day. I would rather struggle and work too hard every single day doing things that I want to do than sit in an office and just hate my life.
Yeah.
So it's like, which struggle do you want? That's what it is.
Yeah. Do you think that because you asked like, what if it never comes, you know, then what? Just sort of based on the I guess the quote unquote goal of, you know, like one day having enough money to be able to still feel as secure as you would feel in one of those dead end jobs that you hate. I mean, isn't there something to be said, especially considering the line of work that, you know, you're in?
It makes no sense.
You're spending all your time doing something that you enjoy. So, like, isn't that enough? As long as you are still fed and you have a roof over your head, and even if you don't have, like, some giant nest egg to sit on in, you know, 40 years or whatever the case may be, like, does that give you comfort at all to just kind of sit there and go, okay, well, I'm literally sitting here and able to be creative all day long, and, like, how many people get to do that and are... That was going to sound really rude, I guess, but who are good at it, you know? I don't know. Like, it's, I know it sounds really cheesy, but, like, I don't know. Maybe that's what people who are in that, you know, sort of line of work are supposed to be able to lean on, is that you're literally able to, like, do what you love every day. And, like, isn't that the dream?
Even if
the dream
doesn't
come with, you know, like, 7 figures. I don't know.
I don't need 7 figures. I just don't want, like I said, I just don't want to ever be in the situation of where I have to worry that a family member far away dies and I have to buy a flight and go, and then I have to not eat healthy, you know, like I have to eat cheap food that I can afford for the next 2 months to kind of make up for that. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want that. So I feel like I'm not asking for much, but then at the same time, I don't know where this fear stems from. If it's from, so I don't know when enough is enough, you know, like I don't know if I suddenly made, you know, enough to afford a condo, if that would be enough, or if I would then say, okay, well, it'd be nice to just pay off the mortgage.
Oh, I have a number. I have a number.
Do you have a number?
Yeah.
Oh.
I know how much I need to live off a month, and if I can hit that, I'm fine. I can't right now, but if I could, it would be great.
Yeah. Well, maybe I need to, like, I know what my number is as far as, you know, for, you know, pricing and stuff like that for photography. Here's the rub. Here's the real crazy thing that I can't wrap my brain around is that for photography, I was making not as much as I was making in my old job, but I was making plenty to live on and be happy. And then I found Twitch and now I'm doing a podcast and it's like, I have taken less wedding work. And so I've cut my income purposely so that I can do the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I've put myself in that kind of, not really panic state, but that uncomfortable state of like, you know, what are you doing, Peebs? You were living the dream, as it were, you know, doing weddings, you know, in Hawaii and Panama and, you know, stuff like that and traveling and you were fine. Why couldn't that be enough? And I don't know. I think I have too many interests to just ever do one thing forever.
Welcome to my curse.
I've always had that. Yeah. I've always had that mindset that like anything that I do is just an extension to, it's like a stepping stone to something else. You know, there's always going to be like evolution of, you know, these things that you try and you say, okay, well, this didn't work, but I liked this and this and this about it.
Yes.
So what else can I do that has these factors in it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like streaming, you know, not that I, not that when I started streaming, I ever thought that like it would make any money or it would be a career or anything like that. But I was able to take that and say, okay, what do I like about this? I like, and the same with working at the movie theater, you know, I like being behind the scenes. I like to be able to stand at the back and watch everybody have a good time. I like the production. So let's learn more about this. Let's see how we can branch this out into something more, into something that I can spend a majority of my time doing and ideally one day be able to support myself doing that, you know?
Yeah.
I think that that's, and then, you know, when that's done, what's the next step? You know, what's the logical evolution from that? And I guess that's always kind of in my thought process there as well. You know, you're always learning new things and you're going to want to take those new things and adapt them in new ways. And that doesn't necessarily mean staying in the same job every day, because it can be hard to innovate yourself if that's what you do.
I get that 100%. I don't necessarily know what I want to end up doing, but I know the things that I like doing, and maybe those things will come together one day.
Steve Jobbing it, right? Because that's what he used to say.
Yeah,
all of the things that he did led up to, you know, his time at Apple. And, you know, what he ended up creating, like his calligraphy course, he just took it because he was interested, and then fonts and stuff. So pretty darn cool. If I had to, when I think of you, Cap, and I think of what you do and your job, I think producer. You like all of the aspects of what a producer does on whatever project it is that they're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Love all that stuff. And Rob and I are the content creators. We like to, you know, come up with these ideas and like, you know, actually do these things, but you can't do them usually without help with a producer. And actually, Rob, I think you enjoy both of those things.
I do. I'm kind of a middle man. I would probably be happy being a producer if I didn't have a need for people to love me. So I'd have to move to the content creator side. So I mean, I love being an entertainer.
Yeah.
Or else I would be happy producing, because I feel I'm actually a better producer than I am an entertainer.
See, I think I am too. I think I really like the aspects of production. And the more I see of people doing the actual production side of things on Twitch or with tabletop RPGs that I've been watching lately, I think to myself, that's what I would want to do in all of this situation, is that kind of facilitation of making the thing happen. Yeah, it's super interesting.
We are very far away from the game now, aren't we?
Like, so far away, it's like
Welcome
we are
to
literally
deep dive.
On Tacoma. I don't even know how to bring that back
nice
around.
Try.
I tried. I had some points, like some cool talking points. So let me just pull those up.
Sure. I imagine at some point you'd love to talk about the end of the game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. So, didn't we talk about this already, though? Where the AI gets rescued?
A tiny bit, but we didn't really get into it.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I really appreciated that everybody lived. As somebody who digests sad shit all the time, purposefully, and loves it, and is like, oh, yes, give me that really sad garbage. I was okay that it didn't. Oh, that's what I wanted to look up. Hold on. I'm looking this up right now. I'm looking up the 4-1
code. Oh, the code. For,
yeah. I promise you this is a thing. I'm just failing at Google right now. If I knew the code, that would help. I could probably look at a walkthrough. Tacoma code. 03. No. 0451. That's it. Okay, hold on. 0451 games. Okay, it's a... You're good.
So 0451 is a key code found in many Looking Glass and Ion Storm games, including System Shock, Thief, System Shock 2, Bioshock Dishonored, Deus Ex franchise, and more. Many think it's a reference to Fahrenheit 451, but it was actually the key code to get into the Looking Glass offices in Cambridge. It has now spread and become one of the defining things in immersive simulation games.
But I wonder if they put the key code to get into the studio as a reference to Fahrenheit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which is possible.
Yes. Super cool. But yeah, so they'll classify these games. Like, I saw a list somebody actually sent me. They said, I would love if you played all the, 0451 games.
Wow.
Yeah, and I went, oh, okay. I don't know what that is, so I'll look that up. But it's a lot of games I've already played. Transistor, Alien Isolation, Deus Ex is on my list, Bioshock, yeah. Prey, Tacoma, crazy. Mm. Firewatch.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. Learn something new every day. Okay, but like if we actually go backwards and think about the game.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you guys would want to talk about that you enjoyed about the game?
I mean, the biggest thing is something you just mentioned, that it the twist, quote unquote twist,
yeah,
is that it's a happy ending.
Yeah.
Like they lead you down the path of everything's going to crap. Everyone's going in the cryostasis. Mm-hmm. And then you don't find out until the last possible moment that one, everyone's going to survive, and two, who you are.
Yeah,
because you don't find that out until the very, very end when you deposit Odin in and you read that script to Odin.
Yeah.
And you basically reveal that you work for the like AI Freedom Federation or whatever name it was.
And we recognize you as an intelligent being that needs asylum.
Yeah.
Do you accept?
And because they built up the doom and gloom for so long. Like you heard me. I was like, yes, yes. Yeah. It was a very... Like, it didn't feel like a cheesy Hollywood happy ending. It felt like a stand up and cheer moment. And that was
like,
awesome.
We know the trope. We know how these games typically go. And we're just going to flip it on its head purposefully and not do that. Which, on the one hand, like, I really appreciate it. And when I think about it, I wouldn't have it any other way. Mm-hmm. However, sometimes I pause and think, wow, they could have really taken that opportunity to show the cost that is usually involved with, workers' rights and things like that, and unions and what sacrifices you have to make to get freedom typically. But everybody else is doing that. So let us just have a happy ending.
Yes.
I like the idea that, hey, despite everything that's going on right now, if you just trust in each other instead of the big man, the company, everything will work out.
Let me have a cap for that. I hear you. here's the thing with this game though the game's story hugely plays on, it's like dangling it in front of you and then almost yanking it away, you know, that thing being the information that you need to fully understand what's happening in front of you and to see all sides of it. The game, if I'm not recalling this correctly, please, tell me to shut up. we don't see them survive. We see them leave on an 8-month voyage to Jupiter, mm-hmm. right? Which is supposedly their salvation.
Yeah, right.
But if you have this gigantic corporation, you are not going to tell me that they are suddenly going to leave them alone.
They could blackmail
while they're cruising off to. I don't know. And like maybe I just like I watch too many you know like movies and
you
TV.
Watch the
like
net.
I'm buying too much into. Yeah, I guess. But like you know, it's.
You could buy into that, but you as
reach,
Amy
their
has
reach
collected
is limitless.
Yeah, you've also collected the data though. You have the evidence that proves what the corporation was doing.
They do imply that they will be safe because they have that information, but you're right. My cynical butt is inclined to agree with you.
It could go anywhere, but I generally choose to go where a narrative is pointing me toward.
You're totally right. Totally right. It's not the best thing in the world for me to do that. I'm just like, I'm a huge sucker for that, like. And it's like, and you know, spoilers, if you haven't seen The Net, and if you haven't, then pause this and go watch it and then come back because it's the greatest movie ever made. But at the end of that movie, you know, everything's fine. And, you know, Angela Bennett is back at her house and her mom's there and, you know, they're just gardening and having a great time. And she closes her laptop and it's all symbolic and shit. But then the little Praetorian symbol pops up in the corner of the screen again, and the little mouse pointer comes over and clicks on it, and you're just like, oh, are they gone? Are they actually, you know, because they're like huge. They're everywhere. You know, how do you stop that? And that's what I thought about at the end of this game was, okay, yeah, like it is shown. It's in front of you that everything's going to work out and everything's great. And, you know, screw this mega corporation. We're going to take them down, you know, but like, that's
when
not
they know
all
where
it.
Your shop.
Where's the
and
rest?
What you buy.
Show me that. You know, like I just
know
see
exactly
but there's,
how to find you.
There's also no like clicking of a symbol. Nothing of that type at the end of this game. Nothing suggesting that they still have a grasp over. Like I can see where you would extrapolate that from The Net for sure. They put it right in front of you.
Yeah.
But in this, not only do they not have that, but they also compile two different cases against the corporation in both the surviving people and the fact that you have all this data. So now you have witnesses over here, you have data over here, you have a strong case against this corporation from multiple
also,
fronts.
The reason they needed this explosion to happen like now is so that they could continue building their apartment complex project because it was already in the black, I think. So just having to have a lawsuit or go after them or anything like that once this is made public, it would probably ruin them for quite a bit.
Even just the victory of, it's enough for me to have the victory of, we stopped that bill from being passed of the fully automated station that they were going for. So we already screwed over the company one way or the other.
Which is interesting because didn't you effectively just kill off some AI?
Oh boy.
Which ones?
Because, well, they're saying you can't have a fully automated system. The bill's not going to pass. But you're now essentially rendering any AI that we're dealing with the station and the apartment complex and all of that stuff that they wanted. What do you think is going to happen after this news breaks?
They could be repurposed.
Hopefully they're repurposed. But they probably won't make any more. It would probably halt production on AI. I would imagine anyway.
It's possible.
Maybe, maybe not.
Well, like it would, when they're talking about the fully automated, would the apartment complex be fully automated? Because that suggests there's no people. Like what they want is a station like Tacoma to exist with no people in it.
Yeah, but I thought they wanted that also for the apartment complexes. Like people can live in them, but it's manned and everything is taken care of automatically.
Oh, I don't know if it went that far.
Yeah.
I could be wrong too. I don't know.
Well, you played it more recently than I did, so I'm going to take your word for that. But yeah, I would think that would be their end game though. If they eventually got a station fully automated, then they would also want, cuz they needed the station fully automated for a reason so that they could continue their project. Mm-hmm. What did they need the station automated for?
I don't know what the project was, but they wanted that bill to go through so that they could not have to pay people to be up there. It was a cost saving endeavor.
Yeah. But I thought for a particular reason they needed it for their homes or something like that, for some reason. And that project wouldn't go through and wouldn't finish unless they had that bill go through, which I think is also just another commentary that I really liked, because that stuff exists. Mm. You know, companies do stuff like that now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's crazy to take what you already know, put it in a sci-fi setting, and suddenly it's way creepier than everyday life. And then you sit back and go, no, this stuff is happening now. Why am I not freaked out? In my everyday life.
Yeah. It's because we need those narrative exaggerations to get our attention.
There's transitions in life. You know, everything feels like a natural development to the point where you don't even notice that it's happening.
Yeah.
Whereas in a game, it's like, boom, this is the world. You know, this is everything that's happening. And you're just like, whoa, holy shit. You know, but, you know, day to day, you know, year to year, there are small advancements made and things change, and they don't feel like big changes, but overall, it's progression towards something like that, and we just don't think about it the same way because it's not, like, thrown at us all in one shot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then obviously our memory fades, and we forget how crazy important something might have been, or it just becomes normal routine, so eventually you forget.
Ooh.
Oh, boy. Well, that was really long, so I think we should probably wrap that up, even though we talked a lot about other things other than the game. It was amazing. Rob, thank you so much, so much, so much for being here. Please come back for any other game that you would like to come back for.
Anytime. And... you know me. I love podcasting.
So, speaking of, would you like to tell everybody where they can find you?
Sure. Everything that I create is at thegeekgeneration.com. We have two podcasts. One is just The Geek Generation. That's been going on for 8 years at this point, over 300 episodes. PB is on some of those, so you can hear her there. And then we have, I assume by the time this drops, Random Movie Club will be back up and running again, which is our movie-centric podcast where every week a different co-host comes on, makes me watch something, and we discuss it for a brief period. Captain has an episode. BB has an episode. Mm-hmm. So you can check that out too. But all that's at thegeekgeneration.com.
And that is thegeekgeneration.com. Ladies and gentlemen, please. Also, I just want to take a second to say Rob is the reason Deep Dive Cast exists, because I told him in a car ride from PAX from his house to PAX East how I had always wanted to do a podcast. And he literally gave me a pep talk the entire time. Just do the thing, Peebs. Just do it. You can do it. So thank you, Rob.
Thank you for actually doing it, because lots of people like to talk. Not everyone actually steps up.
Well, that's the workaholic in me. Thank you. That was amazing. And thank you, Divers, for being a part of it. The Deep Dive Podcast is brought to you by PBTV, and you can find us at deepdivecast.com, as well as on Twitter and Instagram at deepdivecast. And if you like what you hear, consider rating and reviewing The Deep Dive on iTunes. And if you'd like to, you can also support the show by visiting us on Patreon at Pumpkinberry. Patrons receive various perks like monthly black and white wallpapers, bonus episode content, and of course, the knowledge that you directly are keeping The Deep Dive afloat. We'd also like to invite you to join us every Monday morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we air the episodes live and have a deep dive session with the listeners right there in chat. Come join in on the conversation at twitch.tv/pumpkinberry. And we'll see you next time, divers.
The Deep Dive podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.